This is News in No Time at Gordon. On today's roundtable, the prison population on the rise, testing teens for alcohol, a mother charged with murder, and gay foster care. Joining us from our bureau here in New York City is Michael Myers, Executive Director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. From our Chicago bureau, Hakeem Attabuti, poet and distinguished university professor at Chicago State University, and Bev Smith, host of The Bev Smith Show. That can be heard on American Urban Radio Network. She joins us from member station WDUQ in Pittsburgh. I thank you all very much for joining us. Let's take a look at numbers that have been released, and that is the swelling of the prison population, growing at a rate, it says, of 900 inmates each week between mid-year of 2003 to the mid-year of 2004. The nation's prisons and jails held 2.1 million people. That's one out of every 138 U.S. residents. This, Michael Myers, on a backdrop of the crime rate dropping. What does that say?
It may say that criminals are in prison and that career criminals are in prison for a long time. Society got fed up with crime, including the black community. And so I think that the over-incarceration, if you will, of many young people is a result of people getting fed up with crime and getting tough on crime. And three strikes, you're in. And I think you have a situation with respect to a change in the notion of from rehabilitation to that of punishment and deterrence. That's what happened. And it puts the lie, by the way, to the Louis Farrakhan myth about the Million Man March reducing crime in the black community. That didn't do it. It's getting tough on crime that put people in prison and keeps them there.
Well, we don't know what did it or did not do it, but that being said, Hakeem,
well, I know what it did.
Let me tell you, I'm very close to the subject. I work with a young man here in Chicago, and we have three schools also. I would first recommend a book called Lockdown America, Police and Prisons in the Age of Crisis by Christian Parente. And there are many points he makes in the book, but number one, I think that this 2.1 million represents about a 350% increase since 1980. Two, many states, especially California and Texas, their spending on prisons outpaced that of allocations for higher education. Three, prisons now is big business. Starbucks, JanSports, Microsoft all use prison labor to package their products. So you have a prison industrial complex. Five, Correction Corporation of America is the nation's largest private jailer, and it has been dubbed the theme stock for the 90s, according to
And what does that mean?
And so two-thirds of the people in prison today are there for non-violent offenses, which means they could have easily received alternative sentencing. And I think one of the major problems in our community is the need for work is at the heart of the problem. And if you're going to deal with crime in the black community, you have to provide jobs and work and need to create jobs that pay living wage and meet human needs.
Bev Smith, further numbers here. In 2004, 61% of those imprisoned were racial or ethnic minorities. 12.6%, this is an alarming figure, 12.6% of all black men in their late 20s were in jail or in prison.
This begs to the issue of a new discussion in America around the way we conduct our prisons here in the United States. We have the reputation in the world of having more prisoners than any other nation, more people incarcerated. It also begs that we review again how we incarcerate, how we place career murderers with people who have not paid traffic tickets or child support. It also begs us to look at the issues that are bringing people into these prisons, particularly those at younger and younger ages. And Mike likes to refer to toughness of prisons. That has nothing to do with those who are sentenced, because if there was a toughness or a justice or a fairness in the sentencing, the makeup of the prisons would be a lot different
than
they
are. Well, there was a change in sentencing policy as well, Bev.
And those changes.
I will grant you that there are some people who are in prison who don't belong there because of nonviolent crimes, for example, drug offenses, I don't think they should be in prison. There should be rehabilitation. But people who are violent, they belong in prison. They belong in prison for a long time.
Let me finish my point, Mike, because you're making two different points. If we're going to talk about people who are violent, who should be in jail, there's no argument there. And there are those sides that throw that issue up when we're trying to have a discussion on what we should do. First of all, our prisons don't do anything but warehouse and get free labor. We need to reevaluate how we incarcerate. If in the military we make education, exercising, restrictions a necessary factor of discipline, we ought to review what we do with people when we put them in prison. We ought to ask ourselves, why is the recidivism rate so high in certain elements? And then we ought to look at what we do with children in this community, throwing so many juveniles into detention when really what they're having is discipline problems, family problems, and problems of unemployment and poverty. It's too easy to look at the numbers in prison and say, that's because we're putting more prisoners in jail because we're tough on crime. That's
Haki,
not
let
it
me
at
ask
all.
You this. In terms of rehabilitation, most people today will concede that prison is not that. How do you right the wrongs of those who are habitual criminals and those who are, in fact, incarcerated now?
I think what we have to be involved in, number one, is prevention. And I think that prevention starts in the home, starts in your community institutions, most certainly starts in the churches. And I think that's very, very important. To about 600,000...
A lot of these people don't go to churches.
About 600,000...
A lot of these people don't believe in God.
About 600,000 men are released from prison each year. And these men are returning to the same type of community, same type of families that allow them to go in the first place.
And there are lots of young people who live in the community. There are lots of young people who live in the community who are not criminals.
Hang on a second. Let him finish his thought.
Of course, I mentioned earlier that two-thirds of the people are in prison are there for nonviolent crimes. They shouldn't be in the first place. And so you have to understand that in prison, you have basically, well, they are punk factories. That's where, you know, institutional violence goes on day to day. Prison gangs exist. I mean, rape and race wars exist in prisons. So these men are coming back. They have changed. They may go in rather innocent, but when they come out, they are predators in many cases.
All right,
so
Mike,
we have to have institutions to receive them.
My point is that, look, these long-term solutions have been tried for years and years and years. We have a reduction in crime in American society, which we are all thankful for, because there has been a change about who should go to prison and how long they should be in prison, as opposed to rehabilitation, putting them out as soon as they get in.
All right, let me move on to our next topic. Thank you, Sheriff Michael Myers. All right, Texas could be the only state.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Texas could be the only state to bar gays from becoming foster parents under legislation passed by the Texas House. It now moves to the Senate. The ban is part of revamping the state's Child Protective Services Agency. If this law passes, Texas would indeed be the only state, as I noted, in the nation to have this. Arkansas, we should note, barred gays from becoming foster parents, but that was overturned as unconstitutional in December. Now, anyone who applied to become a foster parent would be asked to fill out a form while being evaluated. The form would suggest the question, are you homosexual or bisexual? Person, in order to get the child, would have to answer this. If indeed they answered yes, they would be barred from servicing as a foster parent. Bev Smith, with the issues and problems in the foster care system, do you think this is helpful or harmful?
I think it's ridiculous, because are they going to ask, are you heterosexual, and have you beaten your wife or beaten your children, or have you starved the foster care children in your care? Those are the kinds of problems that Texas is having, not in the gay community who have or may not have foster care, but in heterosexuals. They should be asking, what about an overcrowded system that does not employ the type of professionals that are needed? They should be asking, do we look at the issues of child protection the right way? Do we have enough money coming in for the services? This is a very political issue in a state of Texas that faces racism, that is killing more people at the guillotine than any other state. I mean, it's just business as usual in the president's home state.
Michael
it's
Myers, if, even if you believe this to be an important question, the question of homosexuality and bisexual beings in the foster care system, Bev raises a point that there are so many other questions that clearly should be asked.
Look, race and homosexuality are in a neck-and-neck race for the last taboo in American society. And here I agree with Bev. This is ridiculous. It is. But social theology has always been connected with child welfare services. I remember a time when transracial adoptions were illegal in American society. And then when transracial adoptions were not illegal, social workers preferred to put black children into black homes. So there's always a racial and a social theology connected with child welfare services. We're moving away from race as a concept, as a prejudice, as a taboo. Now it's time to move away from sexual orientation and homophobia as a taboo. So I think that the issue is a child to be safe and to be protected and to be cared for in a home, wherever, regardless of the sexual orientation of the parent. And I don't think there's a test for homosexuality or bisexuality that child welfare services people can administer up front, no more than there's a test for heterosexuality with respect to abuse of children.
You know, Ed, I was almost this close to being on the side of the sheriff. I had taken my Annie Oakley outfit off, and I was going to let him ride on into the sunset. And then he said that we're leaving the issue of racism. And I'm reminded of the article, Hockey in Chicago,
Illinois. I didn't say we're leaving the racial race. I said we're trying to get past racial idiocy.
Well, I don't know what country that's in. I really don't know what country that's in. You had me for a minute, though, Michael.
All right, guys, you know, gotta move on. Go ahead, Bev.
Let me just say something. Bev is right. I think that we're not moving from racism, or are we moving from homophobia? I think we always have to think, what is in the best interest of the child, our children? I think the children have enough issues to deal with on a daily basis, rather than have to go and explain the very complex living arrangement they may be in. This is not to say, and I would never say this, that homosexuals or bisexuals could not be quality parents. But I do think at all times we need to think about what's in the best interest of the children. You see, how do they explain their home life? You see, and I think, and we look at situation by situation, then that's how we make a decision.
And that's the theology in which they denied black children so many times foster care and adoptions, because they wanted to put black children in black homes. This is what I mean by American society having passed laws to move away from racial idiocy. The issue is whether or not a child is to be protected, is to be cared for, is to be loved in a household, regardless of one's skin color and regardless of one's sexual orientation. That's the issue, and I think Bev agrees with me on that.
Haki,
I'm wondering, though, let me not move past that point too quickly. The inference there is that having a home with two same-sex parents may not be the best thing for the child.
Well, I think that children have enough issues to deal with on a daily basis. We run three schools here in Chicago, and children having to come to school and explain their home life situation, I think the best would be... Why? Because children talk about their families all the time at school.
Yeah, and there are children with all kinds of families in American society.
Of course. And some of those families, Haki, are heterosexual. And if you look at,
And most of the children that are in these foster homes.
And some of them are dysfunctional, heterosexual.
Come from heterosexual
homes. One at a time.
That's why I'm saying that we must always think what's in the best interest of the child.
Well, and in doing that, this is an issue where children have not been a part of the discussion. We've talked at the children, but we haven't listened to the children. And so before Texas jumps up or any other state jumps up making these kinds of decisions, why not do, folks, this isn't rocket science, what HBO did. Put a group of young people together who are living in these kinds of homes. Truth of the matter is, folks, children have been living in these kinds of homes forever and a day. It just became part of the political public debate because of the politics of the issue. But if we're really serious about the welfare of children in Texas or Pittsburgh, we better start looking at the system of foster care, the overcrowdedness of our caseworker system, the inability of these children to be attended to, the length of time They right. stay caught up in the system.
All right,
Talk to me about those issues, yeah. and I'll
I've got to get to this
talk
other
to you
issue.
About the other.
And when in talking about the well-being of a child, a mother cited previously for not securing her young child in a car safety seat was charged with murder after her 3-year-old son was killed in an automobile accident. She also faces one count of vehicular manslaughter and 4 counts of child abuse. It was clearly not the intent, her defense argues, for her to injure this child, but obviously there was neglect here, Michael Myers.
Well, second-degree murder can be described and defined as a non-premeditated killing resulting from an assault in which death of a victim is a distinct possibility. I think when you look at the circumstances of this particular case, a person who is a repeated offender, a person who has been found to be a repeated offender in terms of traffic and vehicular offenses, including negligence, including repeatedly not putting her child in seatbelts, I think the prosecution, the state, got fed up and threw the book at her. Now, they've also charged her with manslaughter, vehicular manslaughter. So the question is, as Saul Wattler, the Chief Justice of the New York Court of Appeals, once said, you can indict a ham sandwich. The question is, would you get a jury to come back and convict her on second-degree murder as opposed to manslaughter?
All right, with a little less than a minute 30, Bev, you and Haki weigh in on this very quickly.
Well, I have such mixed emotions. I mean, this woman has already been sentenced because her kids died.
Right.
One child died, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not a sentence.
Hang on,
well, it is to me, psychologically and mentally, it is to me. This is an issue we cannot resolve in 30 seconds or more, and we shouldn't want to try it that way. She did some things that were wrong, and we need to closely investigate why she did it and look at the penalty and weigh whether or not the penalty is worthy of what she's going to be going through for the rest of her life.
I agree with Bev on this. I think there should be alternative sentencing for this woman because she's suffered enough as in terms of a child being killed.
Yeah,
I think that she shouldn't be driving anymore, car taken away, and that she need to do some penance in the community for this crime.
Or her driver's license was already suspended.
But we don't know why she had to take the kids to school. Is she a working mother? Does she have any alternative?
What good will it be
know.
To put this woman
she
in jail?
She should have put the seatbelts on.
No, but we have to look at these things differently. She's going
right,
to suffer
should
enough
note
as
that
a
the woman had
a
three other
right.
children in the car who were injured, but one, in fact, died.
That's
all right, I don't know what Michael Myers had in the coffee this morning, but whatever it is, we need to check that.
I don't
that.
Drink coffee.
All right, Michael Myers,
and I
Beth
don't drink
Smith.
Alcohol either.
And
maybe you should, Michael. Maybe
All right. Michael Myers, Bev Smith, Haki Montabuti, thank you all for joining us this day. Greatly appreciate it.
Bye, gentlemen.
All right, goodbye.